fourth canto, fourth chapter, from text 27, which was yesterday's verse, through the ninth chapter, text 17 is today's verse. I wanted to do, with the permission of the boss. Huh? Not you. I wanted to, the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj is what we're going to focus on today. And instead of just reading the summary given here, I wanted to summarize it myself a little more in detail. Because today's verse, although it is something that can stand on its own, the real glory of the verse is enunciated by understanding the pastime of Dhruva. So we're going to read the summaries up until chapter 8, and then I'll give a summary of the pastime or lila of Dhruva Maharaj, and then we'll read the verse in the purport, if that's all right. That's okay? Okay. So, do you want to just go around reading these? Or? There's not much to read. There's okay. So it was, somebody could start with chapter 4. Oh, the mic's not up. Okay. Chapter 4. Neglected by her father, Sati immolates her body in a fire by yoga meditation. So I'm sure you heard a lot about that yesterday. Right? And then chapter 5. Angered by his wife's death, Shiva creates a fearful demon, Virabhadra, who destroys the sacrifice and beheads Daksha. Chapter 6. Led by Lord Brahma, the demigods pray to Lord Shiva to allow the sacrifice to be successfully completed. And chapter 7. Daksha, who now has the head of a goat, pacifies Lord Shiva and finishes the sacrifice. Then Lord Vishnu appears in the sacrificial arena. So, there was one thing I wanted to comment about in the summary that was kind of passed, is in the prayers by the devotees, when Lord Vishnu appears in the sacrifice, or Narayan, there's a couple nice verses that it would be nice to look at, maybe on your own. And because one of the themes, I guess, in these first two lilas of the fourth canto is anger and how to deal with anger and aversions to each other, or enviousness between persons. And so a couple of the verses there are very, very nice. If you want to read on your own, the chapter 6, 47 and 48. And the purports there are really wonderful. I'll just read the verses. Persons who observe everything with differentiation, who are simply attached to fruitive activities, who are mean-minded, who are always pained to see the flourishing condition of others, and who thus give distress to them by uttering harsh and piercing words, have already been killed by providence. Thus there is no need for them to be killed again by an exalted personality like you. So this is an explanation of that. Persons, they're in their ignorance, and they're going to be in ignorance, and the kala, the time factor, is going to give them the reward or punishment. Why should we become angry and by the anger, we hear from Bhagavad Gita, there are different paths to hell or to lower consciousness, anger, lust, anger, greed. These things drag us down. So if we become angry at persons, then it's not good for us. And then in 48, anyway, that's the main verse. And the purport there is very wonderful, where Prabhupada quotes, humbler than a blade of grass. So as devotees, we should try to cultivate that. We shouldn't become angry at the materialists, but we should, you know, try to elevate them as best we can. So, again, some of the themes, I wanted to start just reading a purport where Prabhupada glorifies this whole Leela of Dhruva Maharaj. It's when Sukadeva first, or is it Maitreya? Maitreya is first introducing King Uttanapad, who is Dhruva's father, and he had two wives, Suniti and Saruchi. Saruchi was much more dear to the king, and Suniti had a son named Dhruva. So in the purport, Prabhupada says that the incidents in the life of Dhruva Maharaj are very attractive for devotees. From his pious actions, one can learn how to detach himself from material possessions and how one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penances. By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God and can directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, one can very soon be elevated to the transcendental platform of devotional service. The example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerities can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. So this is nice. Prabhupada is kind of like, okay, you're about to hear a story here. You know, pay attention. It's a wonderful story. And although the austerities and penances we'll hear about Dhruva Maharaj are way beyond our grasp, but they are directly related to devotional service. And, you know, it's especially today's verse when we get to it, and others will glorify and emphasize the devotional service actions as the topmost activity. So, as in many stories, Maitreya starts once upon a time. So, he says, once upon a time. So, King Uttanapad, king of the world, so you can just imagine the setting, a very opulent palace, and he has his two sons, Uttama, the son of Suniti, and Dhruva, the son of Saruchi. So it just so happened that this king was more affectionate to his wife Suniti, and so similarly he would be more affectionate to her son rather than Dhruva. But the children, aged at 5 years old, they're very innocent, very playful, very loving to their father. They don't understand these dealings of, you know, does he like her more than her? You know, they're just in love with their parents, in love with each other. So naturally, the son wants to climb on the father, wrestle with the father, and play with the father. So Dhruva, it was in the assembly in the great hall. So Dhruva tried to climb on Uttanapad's lap. And immediately, Suniti was very angry at this. And she severely chastises Dhruva. And it's not just, get down, you're not. It was a very hurtful words from her, that you are not qualified to sit on his lap. You are not able to do this. If you perform some great austerities, maybe if you worship the Supreme Lord, maybe, just maybe, you'll take birth from my womb, and then you will have the opportunity to sit on his lap. So very hurtful. You would think that even if a 5-year-old child is not your son, you wouldn't say such hurtful. But she was very hurtful to him, and so the child in a Kshatriya line. We may have talked about Kshatriyas in the past, how they're very powerful, they're very strict to their vows. So he became very angry inside, and he showed it by his tears. And so he rushed out of the palace and went to his mother Saruchi. And Saruchi, hearing what had happened from some of the other ladies, they related, because Dhruvan was in such a state that he couldn't even speak. He was just crying, and so she heard, and so she tried to pacify him that, I'm very sorry, Dhruva, that it is true that your father does have more affection for Suniti than she does for me. So I'm sorry about that, it's just the way it is. But Suniti was right when she said you should go worship the Supreme Lord. Maybe not in the same mood as Suniti was saying that, yes, worship him to get birth in her womb. But she cited that the sages, they go to the forest and they worship the Supreme Lord for whatever they want. And so Dhruva, he became determined, yes, not only do I want to sit on my father's lap, but I want my father's kingdom. And then even more, I want my grandfather's kingdom. Actually, I want more than even my grandfather. So he had such a burning desire now to get back at his mother-in-law or his co-mother that he just had this burning desire that, yes, I must do it. So he went to the forest without, you know, it's not like now when we want to go on pilgrimage, we kind of have a lot of devotees to tell us where to go, what to do. But he just went out to the forest. He didn't have a guide. He didn't have any. He just went out. And so naturally, Narda, hearing about this, he said, wow, this five-year-old boy has such determination. He's just going out into the forest. Let me go see what this is all about. And so Narda approaches Dhruva, and he first congratulates him that, yes, this is, you know, it's wonderful how this, but, you know, let me see, I was going to read a couple verses. He first kind of like tries to say, you know, that this life, a forest life, is very difficult. It's very austere. You have to give up so much. You're a young boy. You should be playing. You should be having fun. Maybe when you grow up, you know, you can concentrate on this. But now just go home, be a boy, and then he preached to him a little bit about detachment. Be detached. People are going to say all kinds of things about you throughout your life. Don't take it too seriously. Just go home. And so Dhruva, he rejected this. And he said, well, no, I can't do it. I'm a Kshatriya. Let's see, where is that? He wanted to, but he clearly admitted. He said, listen, I'm a Kshatriya. I'm less intelligent. I'm ignorant. I can't follow this instruction of yours. I must have this. I must have this kingdom. I must become greater than all my family before me. And so it was a test by Narada to see what his determination was. And so Narada then became compassionate even more. Just his presence and coming before Narada or Dhruva was very compassionate. But then he became, okay, I'll tell you how to do it. Yes, you can approach the Supreme Lord for anything you desire. But here's the process. And so I wanted to give, let's see. Yeah, here's Dhruva's quote to Narada. Oh, Brahman, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my fathers and grandfathers. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. And Prabhupada points out here, he's looking for an honest path. He's not looking for, you know, by hook or by crook, you know, to, you know, by whatever means, I just want this. No, what is an honest way to achieve this desire of mine? Then Narada said, okay, here is the prescription. You should go to, first of all, you should go to a holy area, holy place. Go to Madhuvan. which is one of the forests of Vrindavan. Go there, and then after sitting and doing breath control, breathing exercises, you need to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to help with that, establish the deity of the Lord, and then begin worshiping Him with whatever means you have available to you. And there's a very important purport there, Prabhupada tells, by place, circumstance, time, place, and circumstance, you are to worship the Lord. So, by whatever means is available to you, worship the Lord as best you can. And then he goes on to describe the Lord himself, how to visualize the Lord within the heart. Very beautiful description of Paramatma is there. Not only that, you must chant, and he gives him the mantra, which we chant every day before Bhagavatam, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So chant this mantra, worship the deity, see the Lord, meditate upon him, and then you'll achieve your desire. So Dhruva very stringently, followed his instructions and immediately he started giving up so many things, and then his austerities really started to cause some disruption. Here's some of a description of Dhruva's austerities. The first month, Dhruva only ate fruits and berries on every third day, just to keep his body and soul together. And in this way, he progressed in his worship of the Lord. In the second month, Dhruva only ate every 6 days. And instead of fruits and berries, he changed it a little bit. He said, only dry grass and leaves. And then he continued his worship in this way. In the third month, he only drank water every 9 days. And he remained completely entranced. So that we can just imagine, these austerities are pretty intense, certainly far beyond our reach. In the fourth month, Dhruva became a complete master of the breathing exercises, and he inhaled air only every 12th day. In this way, he became fully fixed. In the fifth month, Dhruva had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand only on one leg, just as a column stands, without motion, and concentrated his mind fully on the Param Brahman. So he completely controlled his senses. And so by these austerities, as we'll read more and more in the Bhagavatam of different personalities doing severe austerities, it's usually to please some demigod, to get some benediction. So the austerities themselves, as we hear some of the mystic perfections, you can become heavier than the heaviest, strong, smaller than the smallest, able to do these wonderful things. And so Dhruva actually started to become heavier than the heaviest. He was pushing down the earth. He was able to stop the breathing in the universe. And so it was a disruption to the whole cosmic situation. So the demigods, they all went to the Lord and said, oh, my Lord, and they went to the Garbhodaksha ocean, the ocean of milk, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, and they pray, oh, please, can you please stop Dhruva from doing this? He's choking the whole universe. And so the Lord said, yes, I'll go to him. So the Lord traveled there, and Dhruva, he firmly had the Lord fixed in his mind. He could see the Lord just as, when we open our eyes, we can see each other. He was able to see the Lord like that. But then in an instant, the Lord disappeared. And so this startled him so much, because he was so much in trance. Then he opened his eyes and he saw the Lord standing before him. And so he was so taken aback that he couldn't even speak. He wanted to offer prayers, but he couldn't speak. Then the Lord mercifully touched him with his conch shell, to give him the inspiration and give him the intelligence to speak. And Dhruva began speaking these wonderful, eloquent prayers. And today's verse is the last verse of those prayers. And so we're going to start, we'll read this together. Is this the Pramasamhita meter? Sadhya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada Padmam.
Sadhya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada Padmam.
Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan. Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta Roshman.
Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta Roshman.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada Padmam.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada Padmam.
Asishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Asishtatanu Bhajata
Abhyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan.
Abhyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan.
Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta Roshman.
Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta Roshman.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada Padmam.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavam Stava Pada
Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan.
Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dinan.
Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakata Roshman.
Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakata Roshman.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavan Stava Pada Padmam. Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dina.
Vadesha Vatsakam Anugraha Karta Roshman.
Satya Shisho hi Bhagavan Stava Pada Padmam.
Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purusharta Murte.
Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dina. Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta
Roshman. Satya Shisho hi Bhagavan Stava Pada Padmam. Ashishtatanu Bhajata Purushata Murte. Apyeva Marya Bhagavan Paripati Dina. Vashreva Vatsakamanu Grahakarta Roshman. Satya. Real. Ashishaha. Compared with other benedictions.
He
certainly.
Bhagavan.
My Lord.
Tava.
Your.
Pada
Padmam.
Lotus feet.
Ashi.
Benediction.
Tada.
In that way.
Anubhajata.
For the devotees.
Purusharta.
Of the real goal of life.
Murte. The personification. Api. Although. Evam. Thus. Arya. O Lord. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Paripati. Maintains. Dinan. The poor in heart. Vashra, a cow. Eva, like. Vatsakam, unto the calf. Anugraha, to bestow mercy. Katara, eager. Asman, upon me. Translation. O Lord, O Supreme Lord, You are the supreme personified form of all benedictions. Therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causelessly merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. Purport, want to start reading the purport? No. You can split it up as you like.
Dhruva Maharaj was cognizant of the defective nature of his own devotional service. Pure devotional service is without material form and is not covered by mental speculation or fruitive activities. Pure devotional service is therefore called ahetuki, unmotivated. Dhruva Maharaj knew that he had come to worship the Lord in devotional service with a motive, to get the kingdom of his father. Such an adulterated devotee can never see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He therefore felt very grateful for the causeless mercy of the Lord. The Lord is so merciful that not only does he fulfill the desires of a devotee who is driven by ignorance and desires for material benefit, but he also gives such a devotee all protection, just as a cow gives milk to a newly born calf.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord gives intelligence to the constantly engaged devotee so that he may gradually approach the Lord without difficulty. A devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service.
The Lord is addressed herein by Dhruva Maharaja as Purusha Artha Murti, the ultimate goal of life. Generally, Purusha Artha is taken to mean the execution of a type of religious principle or worship of God in order to get material benediction. Prayers for material benediction are intended for satisfying the senses. And when one is frustrated and cannot fully satisfy the senses in spite of all endeavor, he desires liberation or freedom from material existence. These activities are generally called Purusha Artha, but actually the ultimate goal is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Panchama Purusha Artha, the ultimate goal of life. Lord Chaitanya therefore taught us not to ask from the Supreme Personality any benediction such as material wealth, popularity, or a good wife. One should simply pray to the Lord to be constantly engaged in his transcendental loving service. Dhruva Maharaj, being cognizant of his desire for material benefit, wanted protection from the Lord so that he might not be misled or deviated from the path of devotional service by material desires.
Satyashiso hi bhagavatam stavapada padmam Ashish tatanu bhajata purushartha morte apyeva marya bhagavan paripati dinam vashreva vatsakam anugraha kartarosman. My Lord, O Supreme Lord, You are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, for one who abides in Your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping Your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causelessly merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. So, there are many lessons in this, the pastime or the story of Dhruva Maharaj. I kind of summarized them into six good lessons we can learn from this. The first, approaching Krishna, even if you have material desires, we'll hear about that. Determination, his determination is exemplary. Following the order of the Guru implicitly, having faith in the Guru, as he did in Narada. Krishna's mercy, beyond our expectations. Dhruva had started with certain expectations, but beyond his expectations, he received Krishna's mercy. Anger misused and used correctly. We'll hear about this perhaps tomorrow. I'm not sure how far it goes tomorrow, but in the further pastimes of Dhruva, anger is used. And then finally, in conquering death. So all these things we can really concentrate when we hear about the pastimes of Dhruva. We'll start with that, approaching Krishna even with material desires. So here in this verse, Dhruva is saying that for the ignorant, you know, who do go to you for material things. So what is that? Prabhupada first says, you know, devotional service should first of all be unmotivated. But what about those with motivation? What is their motivation? In the Bhagavad Gita, we know the four persons. What are the four persons who come to? Okay. What are for everyone else? Right. Four kinds of pious. This is Bhagavad Gita 7:16. That there are four types of persons who begin to render devotional service or who approach Krishna. The distressed. So we can see, yes, because, you know, Krishna consciousness is like a shelter. Sometimes devotees come and their reason for is to become relief from distress. Their life is so horrible that let me get freedom from it. So let me approach this movement. Let me approach Krishna or God, not just our movement, but it's an impetus for all to go and join some convent or church or something. To be, desire of wealth. Now that sometimes a little, we don't have just tons of wealth we're giving out. So what does that mean? But this would be for those who, in a material way are worshiping the Lord as if he were like a demigod to get some material benediction, material wealth. The inquisitive, those who are just curious. What is this Krishna consciousness? What is God consciousness? What is this that everybody's talking about that I don't know about? And those searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So all of them are accepted by Krishna. And in the second canto, we have that famous verse, Akama sarva karma va moksha karma udharadi tribena bhakti yogena yajita purusham param. And this verse, somehow or other, the second canto verse, almost always goes with when anybody talks about Dhruva Maharaj, because he had sarva karma. Sarva karma is like, what sarva is like universe, right? So your kama, your desires are like the universe. You want everything. Give me everything I can get. I want it, you know. So go to Krishna for it. And that, so there's a sarva karma. Sarva akama. Akama is those with no kama, no desires. Those have no desires. They're pure. They just want to serve Krishna. Have no desire. And then the sarva karma, all desires, worship Krishna. And then the moksha karma, those who want some liberation, freedom from material life. Even if their conception is impersonalism or voidism, they just want to get freed from suffering and want free. So all of these three types of persons, Akama, the Sarvakama, and the Mokshakama, all should worship the Lord, because by such worship, it is tribrena, it is like the sun, is a purifying. If you put anything that is contaminated out in the sun will purify it, even if it's disgustingly contaminated, the sun will purify it. So, by engaging in devotional service with whatever way we come to it, we become purified. So, no matter what, go, if you have a material desire, worship Krishna for it. This is what Saruchi is telling Dhruva. You go, yes, you go worship Krishna. Go to the forest. Worship Krishna. He'll give you what you want. And so, how does the purification process take place? To be engaged in Krishna's service, as we heard from Narada, you know, all these things that we do, you know, we chant the holy name of the Lord, we reside in a place, sattva gun place, or a place of goodness, a place that is like a pilgrimage place. So wherever the deity form of the Lord is like a place of pilgrimage, so we associate with devotees, as we one of the verses today that we spoke about last week, satam prasangam mamavirya samvido, we associate with devotees, purifying, all these things together, these are purifying us, and we're engaged. Then we have the relationship with the spiritual master and disciple. He's engaging us in these things, and he is accepting those offerings and giving them to Krishna, and so we are slowly engaging. And then, yes, we may be getting some material benefit as well, but that is gradually purifying. And what happened with Dhruva here? It's he finally says, you know, you're the supreme offer of benedictions. I was asking for the whole universe. I was asking for everything. But instead you gave me attachment to you. And there's a although it's not a Bhagavatam verse, it is probably the most quoted verse spoken by Dhruva Maharaj, that Prabhupada quotes hundreds of times throughout his lectures and throughout the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we may not know the whole verse, but the last line of the verse is very famous. Over different times in my studies, I've tried to memorize the whole verse, but I've always been able to get the last line. So hopefully I won't ruin the rest of it. Stana bilasi tapasi stitoham tvam pratavam deva munindraguyam kacham vichinvan api divyaratnam swamin kataratosmi varam nayache. So this is Dhruva's word. This another account of his prayers. This is from the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. And when he saw the Lord before him, he says, "O my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing severe types of penances and austerity. Now I've gotten you, who are very difficult for the great demigods, saintly persons, and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass, but instead I have found a most valuable jewel. Therefore, I'm so satisfied that I do not wish to ask any benediction from you." So it's such a wonderful prayer that, yeah, I was, you know, it's almost like an apologetic prayer. I'm so sorry that I was praying to you for material things, because now I realize what I've gotten, this devotional service or activity in devotional service, is such a jewel. All those other things are like broken pieces of glass. You know, if you see broken glass, you know, as a child, we look at them and say, "Oh, wow, look at the broken glass. Isn't this cool?" You find it in the dirt or something. Children of the 5-year-old nature, usually, you know, they're like, "Wow, this is cool. Look at, yeah," you find a sand dollar at the beach, or you find even a broken sand dollar. It's like, wow, it's like you pick it up. It's cool, you know, it's real neat. But it's like that. Our mentality is childlike like that. We're thinking, yeah, this car, this house, this money, this, you know, spouse or family member or all these things are everything to me. But, you know, without the jewel, you know, they're just broken pieces of glass. And the more we get, we think we can surround ourselves with more and more. Well, I haven't attained happiness yet because I haven't gotten everything I wanted. I wanted this type of car, and I wanted the new upgrade to this, and I wanted this and that. I wanted a better living situation. But then when we get that, then we think, well, I'm not quite happy yet. I need a little more here, maybe a second place, maybe, you know, more of this and more of that. And so by gathering all these pieces of glass, it doesn't satisfy you. But once you have the jewel in Krishna, in the direction of Krishna, in devotional service, then everything else becomes, oh, wow, what was I striving for? What was I thinking, you know? What was I thinking? So it's such a wonderful prayer. Prabhupada spoke on this over and over again. So when we look at the whole lesson of Dhruva Maharaj, we can see, yeah, we shouldn't feel ashamed that, you know, here I am in devotional service. Yeah, I'm trying to attain, as Prabhupada speaking on pure devotional service in the purport, Dhruva Maharaj was cognizant of the defective nature of his own devotional service. So he understood, he knew that the way he was prosecuting devotional service was not the best way. And then Prabhupada gives a definition of pure devotional service is ahoitiki apratiyata, is unmotivated, is uninterrupted, constant, unmotivated service to the Lord. But are we all at that stage? We're trying to. We're being engaged. Prabhupada and the Krishna Consciousness Movement has so much things to do. We can be fully engaged, but somehow or other we may not be. And that's natural. We may not be on that pure devotional stage yet. But as much as possible, we are coming in contact with devotees, with devotional service, to get more and more of a taste for that. And the more and more we become attached to it, again, it's the same. It's not like we can just stop and just say, okay, I'm happy here, because then other things will come in, the mind will start working. But we always have to be engaged, somehow or other, to engage the mind. We shouldn't feel that I'm not on that pure stage. You know, here I am. I'm in the West. I have a family, and we're struggling to survive. As long as we are trying to keep Krishna in the center of our lives, then, you know, we're progressing. You know, we shouldn't forget about Krishna. And even if we have to go to the point of praying to Krishna for material things, then yeah, do it. But don't turn away from Krishna. Don't think you can get that happiness elsewhere, from some other means. Get it from Krishna. Get it from the devotees. That's the lesson from Dhruva Maharaj's life. It's like, you know, we may say, well, yeah, I don't want the whole universe. I just want, you know, 5 acres of land and a, you know, nice car. But still, it is a desire. But then when we get it, because what do we see now? Then later we'll hear, I don't want to ruin the next speaker's class, but Dhruva did get it. He got everything he wanted. And then I said, oh, boy, now I have it. So then he used it in Krishna's service. And so when we also have to recognize what we do have is also given by Krishna. He's given it to us, just as this verse says, just like the cow is giving freely the milk to the calf. And what is the exact wording? That is the benediction of worshiping your feet. To the ignorant devotees, or to those who aren't on this pure devotional service, we should see Krishna as our maintainer as well. He is our this is one of the processes of surrender or saranagati, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. One of those is seeing Krishna as the maintainer. He's maintaining us, our devotional service. He's maintaining everything about us, our life, our breath, everything that we are here. He is maintaining that. And so again, it is just other ways to see that Krishna is the source of everything. And so by keeping that in our mind, in our meditation, then we won't forget Krishna. And then we'll realize, hopefully, soon that, yeah, Krishna is that jewel. He is that jewel, that diamond I'm looking for. I brought two quotes of Prabhupada speaking on this. I'll just read one now, and if we have time, we'll read another, and then we'll stop for questions. This is in 1966. Some of these earliest lectures are some of the most wonderful Prabhupada. He's very candid and animated. So just like Dhruva Maharaj, he went to worship Krishna just to have the property of his father. That is a long story. So he was going there he wanted his father's property. He went to the forest to worship Krishna just to ask him, "Give me my father's property." There was a desire. But you will be glad to understand, when Dhruva Maharaj, after finishing his tapasya or penance, when he saw Krishna, when Krishna appeared before him, he said, "My dear boy, now whatever you want, you can ask, I will give you." Now he said, "Oh, my Lord, I don't want anything anymore." There is a verse, "Swamin kataratosmin varamnyache." "My dear Lord, I am so satisfied that I have no desire to ask you." Why? "Stana bilasi tapasi stito ham." "I came to accept the severe type of penance just to acquire the land of my father, or just desiring the possession of a few acres of land. But I have seen you. Who are you?" Deva Munindra Guyam. You are he who is never seen even by the great demigods or great sages or great men by many years of penances. Therefore, my profit is that I came to search out some particles of glass, broken glass, and I have got the diamond. So what I have got to ask you, I am now satisfied." So that's a nice, sweet quote from Prabhupada. So we could end here with any questions or further discussion. Yes?
That when Dhruva was insulted, there's a little bit more to it, that his mother,
Saruchi,
she was the first queen. So being the first queen, Dhruva was the eldest son. So it was actually his claim to the throne that he would be the heir apparent to his father.
Right.
But because the father was so much more attached to the second queen, Suniti, he allowed that insult to take place. So Dhruva had some reason that this was his rightful claim, but because of his father's material attachment to his other co-wife, he allowed the insult to take place, and so that made Dhruva very angry.
Right. Thank you for that.
So my question is, Prabhu, so you said Dhruva Maharaj also chanted the same mantra, "Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya."
Yes, it's given
so
by Narada.
He chanted like in the mind or in the mouth, because when he is doing all the penances, he's stopping his breath. How is it possible?
Well, that detail is not given here, but we can assume that he chanted it. He was asked to chant it.
No, so he chanted in mind or verbally.
But then, yeah, the details of that aren't given. But I don't know if it matters whether it was verbally or mentally. He was able to concentrate on that mantra.
Because I was talking to a Mayavadi philosophy. They also use the same. They also use Bhagavatam as example. They give example of, but they said like the Dhruva was meditating on the name, and the meditation was the breathing meditation or inside.
Well, so Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. As I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Son of Vasudev, who is Krishna. So that is. That is the import of that verse. Now, the Mayavadis may take that verse and they'll say, yeah, it is not to Krishna, it is the unborn beyond Krishna. So But the verse is not impure because of Mayavadis take it for something. It is pure verse. It's something that we chant every day. Sukadev chants. And Narada is giving, so certainly there's no question of the purity of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And whether it is in your mind, whether it is in your mouth, why do we chant? To cover anything else entering our ears that may distract us from that concentration on the Lord. So that's why we chant it verbally, to help us, because when we hear a little cell phone, we have to go grab it. We hear so many things, they're distracting us. So we verbally say it to cover our ear. Just like in the Bhagavatamrita, it said at one point, Brahma covered his ears with his four mouths. What does that mean? He chanted, "Oh, Hare Krishna." He covered his ears with his mouth. So in our stage, our neophyte stage, we need to chant verbally out loud to cover our ears. But then, yeah, as we become perfect and we see the Lord in our heart, then, yeah, it may be a more internal meditation. And the devotee, 24 hours a day, he's thinking of Krishna. So whether it's verbally, mentally, he's always... Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of the time, I understand how it is possible to chant Hare Krishna 24 hours.
Well, 24 hours chanting is there. You should dream. When you're dreaming, you should be chanting around in your dreams, right? Strive for that. Yeah. Should we need to chant first the prayer? Sarira vijaja chachandya jayaka jive vile visaya sagare Take to talk to Tina Sansare, Krishna Varadayamai, Paribai Jivajai, Sampasandi Lobai, Saina Mritapa, Vada Krishna Gunaga, Pamela Ko, Chitanani Tai, Jan Manita, Shabbat. You had a quickie?
My question is about, I was reading about the nature of also how, because of the offense she had made to Dhruva, the stepmother, even though he wasn't a devotee when she offended him, that it had a reaction after he became
a devotee. That hopefully will be covered in the next summary class. But yeah, and what was the reaction of that? Of course, when Dhruva came home, he was like glorified, like, here is Dhruva, he has done something that, you know, so immediately, obviously, Uttama, his fame became lessened because Dhruva was now famous. And then later in their life, although Dhruva didn't hold any grudge, still, Uttama fell upon a hard circumstance and he was killed. And so that was described in a purport there, that was a reaction to his mother's offense. Nice point.
She lost her mind after that, ran into the forest that was on fire.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But so I'm wondering
about. Yeah, and those purports probably stresses the importance of not to commit offenses to anybody, because we don't know. Because it's explained there that she didn't know Dhruva was a devotee then. So we have to be respectful to everybody. We don't know what's standard. Okay, Hare Krishna.